And from Whispers from Eternity, number 147. I want to use my own will, but guide it ever, Father, toward the golden paradise of all fulfillment. For I would be infinity's smiling child, confident of being imprisoned no longer behind bars of fruitless desire and withered hopes. I would break the shameful cords of lethargy that have presumed to hold me and step fearlessly into freedom. Released, I now blaze my way through forests of every limitation and delusion. Oh, my little vain ego may strut proudly saying, "Behold my glory, worship me." But I will look through its transparent form and behold thine unimaginable beauty clothed in the subtle form of the whole universe. The silence-tuned hearing of my soul will ignore that tiny boasting masquerader, my little self, impersonating thee, and will listen rapturously to the wind-borne fragrant music of thine own matchless voice, whispering across the ages, I am he. When I was writing the book Light Bearer about my years of time with Swami Kriyananda, I had to go into complete seclusion in order to write it. I found that the attunement required was too sensitive and my own mind was too restless. So if I just cut out all other possibilities, then I could easily and for weeks at a time concentrate when I just disciplined myself in the right way. But I found when I was writing, oddly, that I couldn't read any of Swami Kriyananda's writings and I couldn't read any of Master's writings either, because they were simply too good. I just would, when I would read the way they would express themselves, I would feel like, you know, I had a story to tell that neither of them could tell, but their writing was just too good. It just discouraged me or made me just feel inadequate to the task. So I read spiritual books, but I read actually fairly badly written biographies of Ramakrishna and his disciples, because they were very inspiring, and the fact that they were badly written and they were still enjoyable gave me confidence to go forward. And then I listened to Swami Kriyananda's voice reading P.G. Woodhouse, and I just learned through all the stories of P.G. Woodhouse, because then he was keeping me company, but I could handle P.G. Woodhouse's excellent writing because it was of a different type. And it was so completely true. All of it, everything I said was completely true, and that's exactly what I had to do. But it was also watching this incredible interplay between divine attunement and the ego. And the ego in this case was not trying to take credit. The ego just didn't believe, didn't have the confidence. The ego's role in the particular little drama that I played out of trying to write that book, the ego's role was to see if it could stop me. It was not trying to take credit. It was just being a little annoying brat that was trying to stop me. So I had to give it no food. That was sort of what I did. I kind of starved it out in the corner until there was enough experience of the fact that I can't do this, but Swamiji can. Sometimes people have asked me sort of, you know, what did I include? What did I leave out? Swami told me what he wanted in that book. That's the only way I can say it. It surprised me, a lot of that book. It did not come out the way I expected it. Of course, I got the drift long before I finished it because it was such a long book and such a big project. But as I jokingly said, I thought I was going to write a breezy memoir. And it just didn't come out that way at all. It had a life of its own that once I could hear it, it's not that I ever resisted it, it's that I just had to be able to hear it. And there was a lot of fight. In my case, it was the fight of insecurity of lack of confidence that I could do it until I really understood that Swamiji was going to do it with me. Which, for those of you who know the story of that book, he told me that he wanted me to write it. I was wondering whether I was going to say he asked me to write it. I don't ever feel that it was a yes or no question. That's why I'm hesitating. I mean, even if it had been a question, there was only one answer to it. But he told me that it was going to be written when I was 24. And it was 70. I was 72 when I held the published book in my hand. So there was a lot of time in between. But he said, not yet. But if it's explicit between us that you are going to write this, I can help you. And there was literally a lifetime of spiritual growth in that phrase, I can help you. But there was also, if it is explicit between us. And of course, he was talking specifically, very specifically, about a very specific project that actually was, I would say is, but was the defining reality of my life for the nearly whatever it was, 50 years, 45 years, from the time it was explicit between us until he was able to get it through me. At one point when I wasn't writing at all, Light Bearer was the fourth book I wrote. I did three others prior to that. I started trying to write it in 2003, but I couldn't. I stumbled for 3 years, and then I shifted and wrote Swami Kriyananda as we have known him. But before I started writing that book, I had just been not writing, basically. Little promo pieces here and there and letters of communication. And when I traveled anywhere, especially when I traveled with Swami, I wrote letters back to people. But Swamiji, at one point, we were standing in his kitchen at his home in Assisi. Swamiji often delivered very serious thoughts to me very briefly, in casual circumstances. Why aren't you writing, Asha? He said, are you too busy, too lazy, or too afraid? I said, all of the above. And then he said, I think you need to start. So that changed my life and set it in a new direction, which finally culminated in that book. Are you too busy, too lazy, or too afraid? Those are very good questions, aren't they? All of the above, sir. So this is coming into what we're talking about today. We have this extraordinary story, which is, well, there's so much in the Bible that's so magnificent, so much in all the scriptures that's so magnificent. It's really easy to say this is it, because spirit is center everywhere. So whatever center you step into, you say, this is it, this is the one. This is the story that tells everything, that this is the one you have to remember. You can forget all the rest of it until you step into the center of something else, which becomes the one. All of that is true, of course, because as Swamiji put it once, he said, the more central the truth, the more broad its applications. So whenever you're standing at any center point where you are actually holding some spiritual truth, everything else will follow from it, which is why people hear such different things when someone speaks. When Swamiji would speak, it was a joke, and he used to enjoy the joke. Oh, Swamiji, that was such a wonderful talk. I enjoyed it so much. It's going to help me so much. Oh, what did I say? And your mind would just go blank. You would literally not be able to think of a single thing that he said, because it was what he said, and then gradually you try to recover, and he would just smile at your discomfort. It was a joke. He wasn't torturing us. He was actually illustrating a point. It was illustrating a point that I began to understand much more later. Actually, I had one specific experience in the temple where I'm speaking from now, which was the most vivid of those experiences. Swamiji often spoke on this dais in this temple because the Ananda Palo Alto community, where this is located in Palo Alto, is very close to the international airport, the main airport closest to where to Ananda Village. There's a Sacramento airport, but this has more international flights. So Swami, when he was constantly going in and out of the country, he would come through here and was often gracious enough to come into this temple and speak to us. But I you know, listened to him for hundreds of hours in person over the course of 4 decades. And I remember sitting in the front row of this temple listening, and I developed the habit of trying to tune in very deeply, word by word, just to be in the now. And I was particularly conscious that night. I don't know if it was different or I was just more aware. I don't know whether it was him or me, in other words. But I was very aware of the fact that Swamiji was projecting a vibration of consciousness, that it was an attunement with God that he was projecting. And the way it felt to me is he would project the vibration of consciousness, he would see what the consciousness was, and then he would put a word on it. And so that the vibration came first, the word came second. And I began to receive what he was saying in exactly that same order, and it gave me a profound insight into attunement. Because attunement is not, what did I say? Oh, sir, you said such a good thing about, you gave me a tip for how to practice Kriya Yoga, or I got a good idea about how not to lose my temper. Yeah, all those things are true. But what gives us the capacity to act on those ideas? We can hear those ideas over and over again, but until our own vibration shifts, and I'll say it even stronger, until our vibration begins to match the vibration that the masters are always putting out to help us, we find ourselves just helpless in the middle of it. I mean, how many times do we hear what we're supposed to do, and then how many times do we not do it? And also, even more, I'm going to say amusingly, but it's a kind of bitter, mirthless humor when I say it like that. How many times have I realized, when I finally realized something, that everybody's been trying to tell me this for a really long time, and that I can even hear their voices. I can even hear their voices and remember the times they told me. And I went, You know, or just kind of like, mentally I was going like this, I just don't want to know, I don't want to know. And then suddenly when you know, what's the difference? The difference is that we have received sufficient, it's accumulated, we have suffered, but always it's like, because it feels like that, think about it. It's just like that. It's like suddenly there's a whole shift in perspective. This is what we're talking about when we're talking about attunement. Most of the time, we're just rattling along, singing whatever little song is our little song. There was a sound healer who came to Ananda for a period of time. Swamiji was often, was always very open to anything that was about Dwapara Yuga. You know, and Dwapara Yuga healing and using sound to heal is a very moving into a higher age way of doing things. And so he met this woman, her name is Sherry Edwards, I believe she's still alive, and he was very intrigued with what she was doing with sound to heal. And so she came in to stay at Ananda for a number of weeks, and there was just lots of things that went on. I was peripheral to it. But there's a couple of points that are really interesting. The first was, just as many psychics can see the light aura around, she could hear your Om aura, so to speak. And she could hear what notes were missing and could put those notes in by toning them or by using this machine. And sometimes she actually would even hum for us what somebody else sounded like. You know, it was incredibly interesting, all of that. But after all this effort, we went through a lot of difficulty to try to, I mean, a lot of effort to try to figure out how to incorporate what she was doing. She made this casual comment, "Oh, you all chant all the time. You don't need any of this." And that made me think of what Master says, chanting is half the battle. That's a phrase we often say to each other a lot. Chanting is half the battle. We're not quite sure what the other half is, but if we get one half, then maybe we'll know. But half the battle to what? What are we trying to win? We're literally trying to change our vibration. This whole material world, so they tell us, the scientists tell us, and the sages have told us this forever, it emanates from the divine and it's a vibration. It's a vibration of Om. It's sound itself, which is why music affects us so differently than other forms of art, because it's literally us. It's like what we're made of. So when sound waves go through us, it's completely different than looking at something, because it actually just enters into us. So what are we talking about when we're talking about attunement? Let me go back for a moment. Why is it that I don't fall through the floor and then fall through the planet and then fall into outer space? If all of this is just vibrations, you know, and there's no actual matter, actual physical thing here, it's because we're vibrating at different rates and we can't blend. Why is it that God is sending out his love to us all the time, but we think we're alone and we can't control our tempers? It's because we're vibrating at a different rate. And our vibrations are our thoughts, our feelings, our actions, what we take in, what we listen to, what we allow to come out of our mouth. We are absolutely nothing but a vibration. Different vibrations on different days, different combinations of vibrations. That woman could hear us. She could hear us vibrating in different ways. I want this, I like that, I'm afraid of this, I love God a little, I love God a little more, I want to be free, but no, I don't. You know, all of those, that's a vibration. And what we're doing as devotees is we're trying gradually to bring all those vibrations into alignment with the vibration of God. This is what attunement is. And it's a little bit mysterious, but not that mysterious. I mean, we ourselves can feel it. We can just feel when, I mean, you can feel whether you're in tune with the people you live with, whether you're in tune with the project you're working on. When I was trying to write that book about Swamiji, I made a certain, what would I say? I got started just kind of piecing it together among the other things that I was doing, but I couldn't get in tune with it. Because I would step into it for a little while and I would just get a little bit and then my vibration would have to go over here and over here and over here. It just wasn't enough. Swamiji often went into seclusion when he had a project to do, or at least he would very much isolate the input. So then we have this marvelous story about Jesus and this woman. And Jesus, you know, he's a phenomenon by this time. I mean, they didn't have the internet, but they could talk to each other. And people were hearing all about what Jesus was doing, especially he was healing a lot of people. Now, it's interesting, and of course, those human nature doesn't change. Miracles attract attention, especially relieving suffering when people are suffering. Now, and Jesus did a lot of that, and people told each other that he did it, and they could verify it. I know he was blind from birth. I knew his mother. I helped her when he was a blind baby. And then that story would go on, and now he's not blind anymore. So the crowds gathered around him, and they didn't just crowd around him for the sake of God. They were also crowding around him for what he could give them. There's stories in other parts of the Bible where the crowds were so great, bringing their lame and sick coming in, and someone had someone on a stretcher and they couldn't get close enough, so they climbed on the roof. This is all in the Bible. They sort of peeled back the roof. They lowered the person in the stretcher, you know, down to where Jesus was. Picture it. It really happened, you know? And so there they are now. What I was starting to say, which was interesting, is that Master also healed people in public places. And one of the reasons he was so phenomenally popular is that he healed people. And people were healed in the auditorium. In fact, one of my absolute favorites of all the topics that I've read that he taught was, and I'm not saying exactly, but the last phrase is the key phrase, you know, the power of God to heal through the divine will. Swami Yogananda will show the power of divine will healing, parentheses, bring your sick friends, it says. I mean, imagine what that was like. So that's what was going on with Jesus too. Everybody's crowding around him, but they're all crowding around with vibrations that don't match his vibration. And it's not as if He likes, you know, this one's blue eyes, and that one gives him a nice gift or something like that. There was no willful action on the part of Jesus. Jesus was in a state of oneness with divine consciousness. He didn't come down from that, nor did he try to be there. It was simply who I am. I and my Father are one. He said it. That's who he was. So he moved in a human body with the appearance of being somebody. Well, in the prayer this morning, I heard myself say, change us from being ordinary people into perfect instruments. Jesus was not ordinary people. He looked a little bit like the rest of us, but he was not ordinary people. He was a perfect instrument for the divine. So he's walking along, and he can't change his vibration because he simply is what he is. There's a tremendous magnetic power in that. And those who have had the experience and the good karma to have touched into that recognize not that I'm trying to draw him to me, but I'm so drawn to become like him. And that's what attunement is. It's the recognition and the realization that this little masquerading ego that's trying to take all the credit is just a thin veil, and through it, we see that divine power. At some point, by our very, very, very good karma, we begin to understand this. And then the project of spiritual life really begins, which is really, as Master continually emphasized, all about attunement. Because as soon as we can even hook a little bit of our vibration to match that, there's so much attracting force, both attractive and attracting. It's called the grace of God. When I was talking earlier about how people can say the same thing to you, to me, for 10 years, and then one day, what changes? What changes is that for some reason, in that moment, I aligned myself, and then all of a sudden I'm seeing it from another perspective. That's why even great saints who do great things always say, it's not me, it's the grace of God. And that's not like a humble denial of self. That's just a simple statement of fact. It's as plain to me as I'm standing here that I didn't do it. It wasn't done by me. I aligned myself, and then that force came. So we have this magnificent story in the Bible, which we can just think about over and over, because Jesus is just pushing the way through the crowd, and then he stops. Somebody touched me. I mean, it was a ludicrous thing for him to say. And in the Bible, that's what Peter said. Excuse me, sir. A lot of people were touching you. You know, this doesn't make any sense. And, you know, Peter's not being rude, but that would be the natural thing to say. But, sir, so many people touched you. And then Jesus doesn't explain. Somebody touched me. And, you know, he's just trying to communicate the difference between being present and being attuned. I mean, when Master remarked about the importance of attunement, he talked about the ashram in Mount Washington in the canyon in Los Angeles. He said, there's lots of rats and mice in this canyon, and they're not making spiritual progress because they're not on the vibration of the Master. So there's lots of people putting their hands all over Jesus, but none of them have touched him, because all they're touching is his physical body. They're not touching his actual consciousness. But this woman, because she knew him, I mean, she was from, he didn't know who she was, nobody knew who she was, but she knew him. She had gone inside her own spirit, gone to the center of spirit, and found his vibration. And when she found his vibration, she knew who he was. And she absolutely knew then that he could transform her. She had a profound physical problem. She'd been hemorrhaging, I said, for like 12 years. And did she come to be healed? Or did she come merely to be close to him? Did she touch him out of the powerful magnetism of grace? She didn't even touch him. She touched the hem of his garment. I mean, how far away can you get and still be in touch? She didn't even try to come and put herself in front of him and get him to respond to her. She knew that to touch the hem of his garment would be enough. How do you know something like that? You only know it if yourself has touched, if your actual reality has begun to match his. So she touched the hem of his garment, and immediately the vibration merged. And it, when that, where there is light, no darkness can live. So in that moment, she was instantly healed. And through the ages, her example and her story just stands in front of us, asking, are we too busy? Are we too lazy, or are we too afraid? You know, which one of those is it? All three. But how long will we continue to hold ourselves distant from that power of attunement, the grace of God and the love of the Master, which is always the same with us? It's only a matter of opening ourselves to receive it. God bless you.